Failure is the body of a writer's life. Success is only ever an attire. A paradox defines this business. The public only sees writers in their victories, but their real lives are mostly in defeat. I suppose that's why, in the rare moments of triumph, writers always look so out of place, posing on the book's page in their half-considered outfits with their last-minute hair, desperately upping their most positive reviews on Instagram, or at the strange ceremonies of writing prizes, like the Oscars for lumpy people, grinning like recently released prisoners readjusting themselves to society. Failure is big right now, a subject of commencement speeches and business conferences like FailCon, at which triumphant entrepreneurs detail all their ideas that went bust. But businessmen are only amateurs at failure, just getting used to the notion. Writers are the real professionals. 300,000 books are published every year in the United States alone. A few hundred at most could be called financial or creative successes. The majority of books by successful writers are failures. The majority of writers are failures. And then there are the would-be writers, those who have failed to be writers in the first place, a category which, if you believe what people tell you at parties, constitutes the bulk of the species. For every Shakespeare who retired to the country into permanent fame, there are 1,000 who took hard breaks and vanished. George Chapman, the first translator of Homer, begging in the streets because his patrons kept dying on him. Thomas Dekker, whose hair went white in debtor's prison, and my personal favorite, the playwright John Webster, whose birth and death dates in the Dictionary of Literary Biography are question marks, symbolic hooks into oblivion. He wrote The Duchess of Malfi, and nobody knows where he came from or where he ended up. I am writing this essay because I would like somebody to be halfway honest about what it takes to live as a writer, in air clear from the fumes of pompous incense. The first job of a writer is to write. The second job is to persevere. If you want to write, or if you want to know what it's like to write, you're going to have to walk away from the paths of glory into the dark wilderness, because that's where it is. The dominant narrative at the moment is that failure leads to success. The internet loves this arc. Low, then high. First perseverance, then making it. All struggle redeemed. The more struggle, the more redemption. It's pure bullshit, but not for the reason most people think. I've been lucky enough to know some of the most successful writers of my generation, men and women who have earned hundreds of millions of dollars, who have won all the prizes, who have received all the accolades, who have achieved fame insofar as writerly fame exists. The triumphs don't seem to make much difference. $100 million is worth having, to be sure, but it doesn't protect you from the sense that you've been misunderstood, that the world doesn't recognize who you are. It doesn't. I know if you're a kid writer, you must think I'm either lying or they're crazy. All I can tell you is that I'm not lying. From my own experience, I would even go so far as to say that the more celebrated the writer, the more fraught the struggle. In 2010, Jonathan Franzen talked to Terry Gross about what turned out to be his massive bestseller, Freedom. "I thought I'd written a book that I might, worst case, have to hand sell," he said. "I figured if I could get 200 people to listen to a half-hour reading, they might want to read the book, and then it would spread by word of mouth." This was after he had sold 1.6 million copies of The Corrections and made an appearance on the cover of Time. A friend of mine, a fellow novelist, ran into Margaret Atwood at a party once, and as a way of introducing himself, mentioned an op-ed he'd written in the New York Times on the subject of Orhan Pamuk, a writer they both admired. Automatically, defensively, she snapped back, "I've written for The Times too." My novelist friend ate out on this story because to him, and to me, and everyone we knew, she was Margaret Atwood, and we were a bunch of chancers. Only after we aged and accumulated a few accidental successes did we understand that Atwood is a chancer. She's a chancer even though she's on a stamp. Everybody who writes is a chancer. The psychology of failure and success can work the other way, too. I knew a professor once who published a single letter in the Times Literary Supplement. He constantly brought it up. He had it framed, hung on his wall. On the basis of that letter, he considered himself a major intellectual, a part of the larger conversation. And who's to say he's wrong? Maybe the works of Margaret Atwood and Jonathan Franzen will slowly disappear, and later scholars will discover and celebrate the TLS letter,